Okay, so now, the bliss of blamelessness sounds like a very lofty term. And people have said, come on, blamelessness, you know, that might be a stretch. This is an ideal. It's true that there are very few saints among us who never blow it. And so a very important aspect of this topic is learning true forgiveness, because we will blow it. As much as we want to act aligned, you know that thought, well, I could go either way. Should I or shouldn't I? Oh, yeah. What the heck? You know. And then we spend all those mind moments regretting afterwards. This calls for real forgiveness, either towards ourselves or towards others when they are acting unskillfully. And for that topic, it's a great pleasure to introduce one of the leading authorities on forgiveness, Dr. Fred Luskin, who's the director of the Stanford Forgiveness Project, who wrote a classic book, Forgive for Good, and also Forgive for Love, and has been researching and teaching people about forgiveness for the last 20 years or so. So please welcome Fred Luskin. Good to see you, too. Oh, that's my iPhone.
No, it's a funny thing. This is the second night of this, right? So there's a Groundhog Day quality to this. You know, I think he said the same thing yesterday, right before I came on. I'm just afraid this is going to happen for a long time. Every single day I'm going to end up at Berkeley at 7:45 at night. What a nightmare. I mean, I teach at Stanford, you know what I'm saying? Dangerous territory here. I became a forgiveness teacher because somebody had hurt me really badly, and I couldn't get over it. And what I remember about that was the unimagined difficulty of making peace with something that I couldn't understand at all why it happened to me. Like I had a very close friend who just stopped being my friend. And I remember this was precipitous. Like it was just like off the edge of a cliff. And I remember struggling with this for years, like literally years, because this was my closest friend. And, not just the pain, but the understanding, and this is where the Forgiveness Project evolved, the understanding that we exist in a world which can hurt us in ways that we can't even anticipate, that we have no control over, and literally screw with our sense of how the world should be. And what I see, having now worked with, you know, tens of thousands of people who have been hurt in all sorts of ways, there's that core question of, like, how do I live in a world which can inflict harm on me that is at such variance with the picture I had of how the world is or should be? How do I rejoin that world? You know, how do I go back in? And most of us are unwilling to adjust our picture. And the work of forgiveness is to adjust your picture, but keep your heart open. Because many people adjust their picture and become bitter, which is the world sucks. And that's how they adjust their picture. Well, I didn't realize how much it sucked before you lied to me. That's the base. That's adjusting the picture. Like, I always knew the world sucked, but it really sucks now that I know that you lied to me, cheated upon me, didn't do what I want, ran off with some, whatever the thing is that we find shocking, many of us readjust our picture downward to then say, well, we understand how bad this world is, therefore, it makes sense for my heart to close. And therefore, I don't have to act with a certain integrity. That I can then spread harm and there shouldn't be any consequences. It's a very interesting mental dynamic by which all of us as people push hostility and bitterness forward. And we all do it in every aspect of our life. You know, we treat our partner of 30 years harshly because they might have done something wrong. And therefore, because they did something wrong, we're no longer responsible for how wrong we treat them because we have this little hook. They did X, therefore, all bets are off for me. And what I see in this is almost like the central issue in some ways for peacemaking in this world. Like, do we have to pay harm forward? Right? That's the question, because we're all harmed. Every one of us has been harmed. Every one of us has had mistreatment, and every one of us has been disappointed. At the same time, every one of us has harmed. So we are harm machines, you know, whether it's coming or going, we're harm machines. And the question is, how much permission do we give ourselves to pay it forward? Most of us give ourselves a lot. And that is the perpetuating mechanism by which this world continues its hostility, its bitterness, its wars, its marital disagreements. It's all of it. Because I wasn't treated the way I wanted to. The picture that I had of the way it's supposed to be didn't happen. Therefore, I'm not responsible for the ugliness that comes out of me. And it's so poignant, because we're all complicit. All of us. And there's no them. No, I remember thinking a few years ago that I remember sitting around, not in a group this big, but let's say a third of this, having a conversation, and the thing turned to, well, why can't those Israelis and Palestinians just get along? Well, they hate each other. They've been at war forever. You know, their whole culture is based on destroying the other. How's that for a few reasons? You know, they define peace by the extermination of the other side. These are problems. But what hit me was this, and it was very telling. I was sitting around with a group. It wasn't me in a collaborative group. I was teaching, but it was all Bay Area people who were so left wing. I mean, because Bay Area people generally are so left-wing. The way I think about this, I think at Stanford, the voter registration is 90% Democratic. And I don't think anybody votes Republican, but 10% maybe further left than that is the way I see it. But the joke in my mind is that if they ran like Attila the Hun on the Democratic Party, and like Mahatma Gandhi on the Republican line, it would come out even. So that's what I perceive as the almost unbearable bias of an area like this. And I think to myself, this is what I would think all the time when I would listen to that, in particular when George Bush is president. We can't even be pleasant to our own elected leaders, and we demonize the people in the red states. And we wonder why the Israelis and the Palestinians can't get along. Like, who are we kidding? We live in an entirely safe place. We can slander the President of the United States. We can make all sorts of accusations about him and everybody around him. And we can do that with impunity. And nobody's going to harm us. And that isn't enough to soften our hearts. And we have this phenomenal system of government and this unbelievable economic system, and we're still not kind. We're still not gracious to people who simply disagree with us politically. Like, that's it. You know, it's not like they've killed anybody or they've taken your mother and put her in a vat of acid. They have different political points of view. And yet, people in blue states feel smug, you know, well, those red state idiots, they don't get it. And the people in the red states, they feel all smug because the blue state idiots don't get it. And I think, well, okay, if we're stuck in that kind of prejudice, how would anybody in the world learn to get along, considering what we have going for us? So we use our mouths politically for hate speech all the time. And we still wonder, like, what's wrong with them? So I was at, this is a true story. I was at, and I've told this story a number of times because it's so phenomenal to me. I was at a talk where, I gave a talk and there were like hundreds of people there. And I talked about this concept of red states and blue states. And if you want to look at forgiveness in terms of like your actions, then allow people to do things that you don't agree with and allow them to be who they are with kindness. If you want to look at the essence of forgiveness, it's allow, like, welcome people in who you don't see eye to eye with in all sorts of ways and work on your own ability to be gentle and kind because you're forgiving the fact that their opinion is different than yours. And that's what the whole thing is anyway. So I was given this talk and talking about red states and blue states and then saying something along the lines of, you know, I think this was 3 years ago. I think the war in Iraq, I said this personally, is a travesty. That, you know, we were the invading party, all this stuff. I gave my Bay Area point of view, right? But I said this. I said if I met George Bush or Donald Rumsfeld or Karl Rove or whoever I met, I would do my best to be gracious and respectful and kind because that's my character. And then at the end of the talk, this woman comes up to me and like is hunting me down to tell me how much she liked that piece of the talk, and I had no idea what she was talking about. And she corners me, and she says this, Fred, I loved what you said about politics. I'm thinking, what did I say? I gave a four-hour talk. It's like 4 minutes. She said, well, Donald Rumsfeld's my father. And I realized two things. One, it's all personal. All the hate speech we put out affects somebody, even though we don't think so. And two, she said this, which was so gut-chilling. She said, my kids have had to leave two schools because the liberals, and she said it dripping with venom, really, dripping with venom, harass my kids because they don't like his grandfather's politics. They give him grief. The teachers, like everybody, little Johnny's like 8. And they're giving him grief because grandpa is running a war. And all of a sudden, in a way that I had never gotten it before, I saw how our harsh righteousness is toxic. Even though we firmly believe we're right, and they're on the side of the angels, our way of doing it inflicts pain. And what I saw was our opinion, say, as a Bay Area towards Donald Rumsfeld, was a dramatic form of unforgiveness. Like, we may not think that that's what it is, that our projections of our own resentments don't land somewhere. But they do. We just don't always see where they land. And it hit me, wow, this is a topic so much deeper than just, do you forgive your grandma? Or do you forgive the boyfriend who lied? The question now that I see is, this is part of our peacemaking. You know, can we sit with a world which doesn't conform to the way we want it to be and still be kind human beings to the people who do the things that we don't think are right. If we can't, there's no them to blame for the state of the world. And that is a deeper call than just, can you forgive grandma? Can you forgive your neighbor? Can you forgive yourself? It's like we're all contributory towards this. You know, we're all co-creating it. And forgiveness seems so central to me. Forgiveness and the piece of it that I like to focus on, the right speech part. You know, what comes out of my mouth? Not what's wrong with them. You know, I can, again, it's very easy to find what's wrong with them. But it's much harder to control this so we're not contributing to the ugliness in the world. Right? I mean, that's the practice of forgiveness in action. So let me give you a very simple practice, because I don't want to just stand up here and yak. But we don't use this for enough goodness. Like, there's a lot of research, part of it from the negativity bias, part of it from culture, part of it just that we're not trained, that even with people we like, we're overwhelmingly negative. We are. Like, you know, they ask married couples, what do you like about your spouse? They say, well, he does the laundry. What don't you like? They pull out War and Peace. You know what I'm saying? That's the way we are. And what I've now come to see, again, this is directly related to the happiness stuff. You have three choices as to how you evaluate your life. You can praise it, you can be indifferent to it, or you can criticize it. Criticizing it is unforgiveness. It's not okay by me the way it actually unfolded. Criticizing it is unforgiveness. I don't like the way my life unfolded. Now, there are useful moments where that's essential. But moving forward, it's toxic. And so what I'd like you to do is just the simplest practice of using your mouth for kind speech. I'd like you to think of someone you like. And I'd like you to turn to somebody near you here and describe them in only nice terms. Now, that might take you 3 to 4 seconds. But I'm going to ask you to do it for 3 to 4 minutes. I'm serious. I want you to use your speech for good, for praise, to balance all the criticism we bring all day long. All the criticism about everything. So here's what I'm going to ask. Just turn to somebody here, pick one person you like. I'm not even asking you to pick somebody you don't like. I mean, that's the advanced course, you know what I'm saying? I'm asking you to actually try to pick someone you like. But we're not going into those outer realms here of pick someone who's harmed you. I'm just saying try to pick someone who's nice to you, and you'll find it hard. And what I'm going to ask you to do is talk about, like, what you like about them and the good they've done and what you've learned from watching their model and what traits they bring to the world that'll be wonderful if everybody had and how you might pay their goodness forward and how you could pay them back. You see what I'm saying? A thank you speech, a goodness speech with not one shred of criticism if you're capable of it. So take, you know, a couple minutes and find a partner and say nice things. Okay, can I have your attention? I only have a half hour or so here, so I don't mean to cut you short. I just want to cover some things, I guess. The point of that practice is a constant reminder that we can focus on positive or painful things, that no past action compels us to remember harm done. So at any moment, you can decide to use your mouth to say nice things about someone. And what that will do will change your biochemistry. And that biochemistry then allows you to forgive if you want to. Like you may not go directly to forgiveness, but a few minutes of praise of anything lowers your heart rate, you know, smooths out your immune function, harmonizes your nervous system, changes some processing in the brain, changes blood flow, all of which give you greater access to other forms of positive emotion, of which forgiveness is one. All the complaining in the world, all the criticism of George Bush or Karl Rove or your grandmother or my mother-in-law, all of the criticism of any of those people will never allow your body to open up to goodness, no matter how often it's practiced. And forgiveness emerges in a body that has been open to goodness. And it is more about how we practice our life than it is what anybody has done to us. Because right now, we can practice any form, you've learned many of them here, of open-heartedness. So let me just give you one simple example. Just close your eyes for a moment. I'm going to do just the briefest meditation practice, just the briefest. And I want you to just take maybe two or three slow, deep breaths into and out of your abdomen. Very slow, deep breaths. And then after those two or three slow, deep breaths, I just want you to review maybe the last 12 hours. For anybody who has offered you kindness, like, can you think about your day? Has anybody done anything of kindness to you? Did anybody say a nice thing to you? Did somebody, like, you know, do your laundry or cooperate with you or help raise your kids or listen to you kvetch? Or did they serve you dinner? And what I have found is very simply forcing people to look for kindness, which it takes forcing, opens them up to recognize what the world is always giving them. And then forgiveness flowers a little more in their heart. So just notice, like, who was nice? You know, did anybody cooperate with you at work? Did anybody slow down because you needed to get into a lane next to you? We don't even notice this stuff. We're so busy looking for who's not doing what we want. We fill our minds with it all day long. A complaint after complaint after complaint. And then I just want you to think of one act of kindness just as you sit there. And just reflect on it. On the truth that every act of kindness is freely given. Can't be coerced. And what a miracle that is. It's just a miracle that human beings choose to be kind. Just a miracle. And we rush by it. And we create all sorts of victim stories about how nobody does this and nobody does that and we're not understood and how unfair it is. So, for one more moment, just sit and breathe into and out of your heart if you can, offering thanks for any kindness. And you'll notice that who you are softens and quiets and becomes more available for goodness. And if you wanted to, this part of you could find words of forgiveness for many things. It just has to be accessed and practiced. And it comes from saying nice things and reflecting on good things and becoming aware. Okay, let go of any image. Return your attention to your belly. Take one or two slow, deep breaths and allow your eyes to open. Forgiveness is so related to gratitude. Grateful people forgive more easily. Because why would they want to kill their own day? Because they see good. I'm going to finish with a true story of one of the ways that I had to struggle to teach this kind of thing. I was working in a VA hospital about a decade ago, a little more than a decade ago, and I was an intern psychologist. And that's at any place, the intern is like the absolute lowest person in the universe. And I was given the coronary heart disease, like anger management group, because nobody wanted to do it. I'm just telling you, nobody wanted to do this group. I'm at a VA hospital in New York, and nobody wanted this group at all. And so, of course, they give it to the intern, right? Because what else do you do with things you don't want? So I get this group of maybe 20 veterans, each of whom had cardiovascular disease, each of whom had been a veteran of either the Korean or World War II, so they were older, and they were crusty guys. I mean, these were guys in their 70s and 80s, and very early 80s at that point, and they just were not interested in some West Coast person trying to tell them to chill. They told me to go back to my hot tub. I mean, it was like, seriously, they were having nothing to do with me, nothing. And they were not interested in anything I had to sell. And it's like, look, kid, we want heart disease. You know, it's like that's how they were. It's worth it. I get to scream at everybody. Why would I give this up? So I go on with them for about 3 or 4 weeks, and I do them absolutely no good whatsoever. And in fact, by the end of the 3rd week, I'm convinced, this is true, that one of them was going to have a stroke during my class, and I was going to have to tell my supervisor how I killed one of these guys and my cardiac rehab class. Because they were so volatile, and I didn't know what to do, and I'm trying all this make nice stuff. Let's breathe into our hearts. They don't want their heart. You know, let's talk nice about people. And they're cursing. And I mean, it's really funny. It was such a culture thing. So in week 4, one of the things I realized was that every single week, all of these guys came in off the Long Island Expressway. This is in Long Island. It was in Northport, and they had to take the Long Island Expressway in, and then you'd come up. Beautiful, beautiful spot. But they're all coming in on the Long Island Expressway, and they talked about all the terrible women drivers. That was their mantra. And each of them, these are older guys, and they were curmudgeons, and nobody was respecting them anymore, the whole thing. But they reserved like a special level of hell for women drivers. And I don't know how they could tell if they were women. I mean, that's the thing. They were cars, you know what I mean? But every car that did anything wrong had a female driver in it to these guys. Okay. So they're going like this, and you see the asshole in this and the schmuck in that, and they're going on and on and on. And I'm so tired of them. And they're as tired of me. So this is what I did. This is how I brought this down to reality. I said, okay, guys, here's what I want you to do. I want you to make believe we're on the Long Island Expressway, okay? And we're driving along, and all of a sudden we see a woman driver, okay? So let's give him the bird. I do this with 30 guys. I say, goddamn woman driver, okay? Then I say, but wait a second. Here come 25 cars that are driving perfectly, not a female to be found. So what I want you to do is go, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Woman driver, thank you, 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 thank you. I said, if you're telling the truth, there'll be 2 or 3 bad drivers and 1,000 good ones. And why the heck do you come in here and only talk about the 3 bad ones? That's why you have heart disease. So the practice for forgiveness begins with seeing your own life clearly. That yes, you may have been harmed, and you may have harmed somebody else. And every single day the sun shines, and people care for you, and you have running water, and you have abundance, and there's goodness everywhere. And the practice that gets right into that is just see it and tell the truth. Thank you.
Nice to be
so
here.
So much.
Fred Luskin.